There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right. It is Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5, awaiting a House committee resuming their hearing on rules for the impeachment debate. So we'll vote tomorrow. And I think it's a foregone conclusion on how that vote will go down. Of course, there's another wrinkle to this. And Dalton mentioned something to me a second ago, and I'm going to have to dig into this, that there could be a move. This is something I was ignorant to this. There could be a move that that the House could vote the articles of impeachment out or vote on them, but then not move them to the Senate. Therefore, they would have, if they wanted to have any political points scored against the president, they could do it by not moving it. They could vote on it and say, okay, here we go, we impeached the president, but now the Senate will not get a chance to exonerate him or vote not to remove.
Yeah, there was an article from the Federalist here recently, and David Marcus with that website, and he said, on Monday, a new concept was floated in the media addressing how Democrats might extricate themselves from the impeachment. It said... the problem you see, and this is his editorial here, as soon as they undertake the solemn and sad duty of impeaching President Trump, the whole process moves to the Senate, where, what we've been saying, Republicans control the process and almost certainly hand Trump a big victory. He said, what if this idea postulates that the House impeaches the president but does not send their case to the Senate? This does seem to be an actual option for House Democrats. Basically, they would pass the articles of impeachment, technically making Trump the third president to don that mantle, but then just slam the brakes and take no action to move it to the Senate for trial.
Okay, so because number one, I'm learning, you know, like so many times we have to learn things that I didn't know were options out there. I thought it automatically went through, but in this case, obviously, it does not. But then what do you do? If you're the Democrats, I'm just thinking about this, if you're the Democrats and you know that this is not going to result in removal of the president, right? The Republicans aren't going to break rank, not enough of them in the Senate to vote for removal. Then if you think the process would help your case, you would let it happen anyway for, you know, testimony to come out or whatever. But if Mitch McConnell's going to fast track this and you're not going to get that pound of flesh extracted, then it's better to have the accusation made, which is what kind of happens with
there,
the...
There would be one vote on the books.
Yes, the accusation in the articles of impeachment would be made, but you'd never get a determination. So remember back to the grand jury is the House, the jury is the Senate. So the accusation, the indictment's made, but you never have a chance for exonerate. Interesting. I didn't know this was a
Yeah, and this is the first time I've heard about it also. I need to find more sources to completely back it up, but according to this writer, there were multiple members of the media talking about this here recently, and yeah, if they did do that, then it would become who has the better spin machine. Who's able to better spin it, because the Democrats would then say, well, the reason we didn't push it all the way to the Senate trials because we knew how that was going to go. We knew that the Republicans were going to shut it down immediately and it would go nowhere. And the Republicans would say, see, they had no case the whole time.
Yeah, I wonder, I read that that clip there in the beginning of last hour from Senator Doug Jones. And, you know, he's been on with us before, and he said, well, he's just waiting for more information, because I asked him several times, how would you vote on removal of the president on articles of impeachment? He said, I need more information. Then he's quoted talking to, I think it's CBS 42 in Birmingham. They asked him the same question we have, and he said he had not made a decision on impeachment yet, but did say the impeachment inquiry is going to hurt the country. Now, I don't know. I might be putting things together that don't link together. But you wonder if that's the plan. If they went with this, Democrats could say, we did what we did in the House, but we realized how much hurt was happening to the country, and that the election for the people to remedy this situation is coming up in less than a year. So because we're the bigger states people here, we're taking this high road. And I don't know. I mean, I'm absolutely conjecture city with this, but I'm still trying to get my mind around that you move through articles of impeachment, but then don't send them to the Senate. So you accuse, but you never get a chance to exonerate.
Which was not what impeachment was made for.
Correct. I mean, they boils it down to what you said. The impeachment process was there to remove, right? If you thought it was worth going through all this to remove, not just to put some political roadblocks up. But I don't know. You know, both sides are raising money off this. Okay, understand this, American people. If you're dyed-in-the-wool Republican, dyed-in-the-wool Democrat, you understand this whole process right now is driving fundraising for Democrats and Republicans. You do realize that. Okay. I mean, this has a value to them in the fundraising side. The overall parties, the DNC, RNC, this drives. Now, it may hurt individual candidates. You've got these Democrats that are in districts that Trump won that they got to, you know, stand tall before the man tomorrow and make that vote. You'll see where that goes. But the overall parties, man, they're making money off this.
And another part of this is the Democrats don't want this to stretch into the election season. They want this to be over and done with by
the
time.
Or don't they?
That's at least what they've been saying anyway. Yeah. And they don't want the senators that are running for president right now to be in the mix to have to sit there during this jury trial while they're trying to run campaigns. And plus, like you said, the president's been running this. Both sides have been making a lot of hay off of this impeachment process. And maybe if the president has more ammo on this than they do, they'd want it to end as quickly as possible.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens. That's a new wrinkle I had not heard of. So you'll be maybe the first one at the water cooler to know that there's possibly this option out there to move the vote tomorrow for articles of impeachment, but not move it on to the Senate. Fascinating. Thank you, man. Coming right back, City of Pensacola, City of New Orleans, other places have been under a cyber attack. Pensacola back since December 7th that has crippled the city's computer system. And now they've even spent $140,000 on this agency to come in and try to fix what's going on. But when I think tech, I think our buddy Abe Harper from Harper Technologies. He joins us to talk about that coming up next right here on Midday Mobile.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. As I mentioned, when the story's been up for 10 days or so. I've been talking about it, and I keep thinking every time, I'm like, I have got to get my buddy that knows a lot more about this than most of us to talk about it and give us some clarity. And that's the story of what's happened in Pensacola, not only Pensacola, New Orleans, and in other cities with a cyber takeover of the city computing. My buddy Abe Harper from Harper Technologies joining us now to talk more about that. Hey, Abe.
Hey, Sean. How are you?
I'm good, but I'm worried that first it was, you know, Pensacola, then we heard about New Orleans, and then even Edwards, Mississippi. Is there now specifically going after cities for these hackers? What's happening to us?
So, I mean, I think we're seeing some levels of trending, obviously. And I think it's a little bit early yet. I know New Orleans is talking, they'll be shut down for 10 days while the FBI and Secret Service do forensics and analysis. And Pensacola has been kind of quiet about theirs since they were impacted, but they're gathering data as well, I'm certain, to give us a lot more intelligence on the back end of these attacks. You know, it draws attention when it's a municipality that gets hit. And as a result, we're a lot more aware and cognizant of those impacts when they happen, especially when they happen in multiple areas, seemingly within a, you know, a stone's throw of where we are. From the ransomware and the cybersecurity perspective, and, you know, these are numbers that I talk about often with people, especially during, you know, seminars or events, but they're ramping up, and it's been an ongoing trend where the numbers between 16 and 17 increased almost 167-fold, and then the numbers between 17 and 18 decreased slightly because we got more responsive, but that just means that the bad guys are spending a little more time being intentional about what their next attacks were going to be. So there's definitely a trend going on here. I think it's more visible because of the targets that have been hit as of recently, though.
Yeah, I mean, you had said to me, I want to go ahead and, you know, talk about, we talked off the air for a second ago. You said it's because of the nature of these are big name targets. But, I mean, it's not like this is new. It's just the fact that, yeah, it makes a news cycle when it's a municipality more than if it's, you know, ABC Widget Company.
That's right. That's right. And the other side of it, you know, these guys are, they're very high functioning individuals, for lack of a better term. They are very intelligent, which means that if they're doing this for profitability, they're going after sites or targets that they think will reap the biggest rewards. Municipalities, large corporations, and high profile figures have the ability to pay the ransom if necessary. And in some cases, because of the number of people that are involved along it, and you have to, for the listeners that don't know, there's an anatomy to a cyber attack. It doesn't just happen and all of a sudden there's ransomware on your computer. This is a method of several tools being used, everything from social engineering to security compromises to phishing. And then after they've gathered the information that they need, then they lock yours down and hope that you don't have backup so that they can sell you yours in return.
Let's do that. That's good to circle back and explain. So, you know, with ransom, the idea of ransom, that means somebody has something of value to you, and if you want it back, you've got to pay them the money. So what is the thing of value? When they go after a municipality, what is the thing of value that they're holding?
First and foremost, functionality. You know, once you shut down a municipality, you're talking... in New Orleans and Pensacola's case, fortunately, they didn't get to first responders or public safety sectors. But they did get to these sectors for the courts. They got to the sectors that affect the business licenses, which means your revenue streams are shut down, because this time of the year specifically, here, most municipalities are sending out business license renewals. They did get to the areas for public services, such as utilities. So people can't do their online bill pay, and for municipalities that depend on that, that's a pretty specific asset that's a revenue stream. So they're online. So, you know, even if they have a backup, if they pay the ransom, it might be faster for them, because New Orleans has thousands of computers. They have thousands of devices that were impacted by this, by the shutdown. It might be faster to pay the ransom, get them in some sort of a corner to release the data, and then get back online than it would be for them to have to go and do a full system restore and then ferret out all the compromise areas.
But if the data is of value, too, what are we to believe? I mean, the hackers say, okay, here's the data back. Your functionality's back. You paid the ransom money. But it's not like they're going to, we'll go shred. We're going to go shred all that data we had.
That's right. That's right. Now, your data is likely in their possession. You know, day zero is the ransom attack, and you typically could start at day zero and work your way back about 30 to 45 days. And these guys have somehow or another gotten somebody to click an email and a phishing click a link in a phishing email, or someone to go out and install an application unknowingly on their computer. And they've been inside the system. They've been able to move laterally and add their different tools that they use along their checkpoints into the system and gather information. And, you know, I don't know what the output of that, something like that, looks like, but invariably I can't help but think that they're harvesting that for valuable information such as credit card or PII, personal identifiable information like Social Security and birthdays, and then they're reselling that in, you know, somewhere on a black market likely.
If y'all just joining us, talking to Abe Harper with Harper Technologies, a man that looks at these trends going on out there, and this one just happens to be in the spotlight right now. It's been going on for a while, but because of Pensacola and New Orleans. And I want to get to what you would tell other municipalities in a second, but I do want to go back, because you keep saying this, and I want people to hear it, that the attack, the day you find out about the attack, that's not the day the attack happened. This attack, whenever it is, has been going on well before the announcement of, hey, you've been taken over.
That's right. That's right. And I mean, to kind of put it in the perspective, it's kind of like someone breaking and entering a home. You can think of it very much along the same lines. You're not gonna have a criminal just walk up randomly to a house, kick in the back door. A burglar walk up to a house, kick in the back door, and walk in. They've spent some time, you know, the poli sci term, casing the joint.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they spent some time learning who their victim is going to be, if that victim has value, what, where, you know, and in more elaborate bank robberies in the past, you can study. They've actually studied the footprint or the blueprint of the bank to know what they were going after, how they could get it, how they could move it out. Same thing with data technology. These guys are spending time learning who their target is, finding out how they can most relevantly attack them, and then how they can, once they've secured that, how they can add additional value on the back end by charging them to get that information back.
What do you tell? I mean, what do you tell? And I mean, obviously, specific cases have specific remedies. So I know, you know, that's why you deal with different cases. But in general, what would you, if all the municipalities that didn't get hit got on the phone and called Harper Technologies today and said, "What do we need to do, Abe?"
So there's a few things. Number one, obviously, is have an off-site backup. Have something that's not attached to your system that contains your data so that you can get back up and running. That's first and foremost. Because the truth of the matter is we can do a lot of things to prevent these attacks, but what we never know in the technology world is where the bad guys are going to come from next. Right? We can do all kind of predictive monitoring. We can do all type of firewall monitoring. But if there's a tool that's invented that predates the definitions of an antivirus or an anti-spyware program, then that tool is going to get past that first line of defense. So having redundancy of your information is number one. Number two, having a planned program of education for your employees and your team is high on that list, because, you know, in the event of something like this, a lot of financial institutions and high-level public sector institutions use you hear of them as like penetration testing or cybersecurity prevention. People need to be aware of what's going on so that they don't inadvertently end up in that boat. That's the key element. And then number three is have a partner. Even if you have an on-staff IT, have a partner that helps you do two things. Number one, that's write a plan of remedy or a plan of action in case you are compromised. And number two, somebody that'll help walk you through an advisory of having a cybersecurity insurance policy. Those are rapidly spreading like wildfire right now, because there's so much going on in the world of cybersecurity that if you get hit, the financial impacts can be staggering at minimum. So there's actually a number of riders and waivers that you can get on your insurance policy that cover for cybersecurity, for wire fraud, and a good partner will be able to help talk you through some of that process so that you can partner with an agency that gets you the right coverage on that. I can't remember if it was New Orleans or Pensacola, but one of them actually alluded to that in one of their discussions, that they knew they needed to have the discussion around cybersecurity insurance, or cyber insurance. And now, you know, I think it was New Orleans, they were talking about $140,000 to bring in the firm that they brought in to help investigate and remedy this.
You ought to see my face. I'm slack-jawed right now, because I hadn't thought about that, but you're saying that there's insurance policies or riders on top of an insurance policy that covers if something like this happens.
That's correct. And there's historically, you've had data loss or abstract data coverage policy riders that you can subscribe to, and they're, you know, they're very sometimes they're hit or miss, and a lot of insurance agents won't push it. But the really good insurance agents, especially if you're a small business owner or if you're a municipality, a large business, large enterprise, a good insurance agent will be talking to you about that as well as your IT consultant, because if you take that financial impact entirely, it's coming out of a budget somewhere, and then it's adding salt mm-hmm. in an open wound, because now you're being, you know, you've got your data stolen, so you've got a black eye, and then you've also got to pay the ransom, or you got to pay a remedy company to come in and help track it down.
All right, can you hold on for a second? Because I got opened up a couple more questions. Run to the break, coming right back. Abe Harper from Harper Technologies. A plan of action if you get hit with a cyber attack. I'll lump myself in with the small business owners who just went, oh man, I probably got to get that. Yeah. All right, coming right back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Continue our discussion with my friend Abe Harper, Harper Technologies. Hey, and I guess, Abe, hey, give folks to a quick, what's the elevator talk when somebody says, you know, hey, what do you do? What do y'all do? What do y'all do?
So our company focuses on three verticals, managed IT services, which is effectively everything from endpoint hardware out to cybersecurity, comprehensive preventive maintenance as opposed to reactive maintenance. Number two, infrastructure, fiber, copper, and wireless for on-prem networks or computer clients or services for organizations that are building their network out. And then number three, data services, which includes off-site backup, cybersecurity, and forensics. And that's kind of the fun space to play in. It's a little more abstract, a little more day-to-day than everything else is.
I'm glad you're looking at this and watching these trends for us and helping wake us up here with these municipalities hit like Pensacola and New Orleans. Makes us think about our own businesses, our own personal life. A quick question before we get back into that. Who's doing this? You talk about the hacker. Is it, I mean, I've got this idea of some people in a bunker-like room somewhere in Russia. Is that who's doing it? Who's doing this stuff?
So, I mean, there are such things as state-sponsored hack groups. I forget exactly where I read about it, but there was one that was unearthed not all that long ago, I think in Turkey. Bad actors is the word we use for it in our world, and that can account from anybody from organized hack groups to a solo person that's kind of rallied some troops around them to go out and attack a couple of specific targets. The weird thing about it is the tools, and you hear a lot of people talk about the dark web or the deep web. The tools that these guys use are as openly available out there in that marketplace as a standard rake would be available in Home Depot for Gardner. So it's not like this is a heavily regulated environment. Government agencies do have eyes on it to an extent, but you know, to paraphrase from the Matrix, nobody really knows how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Right, and you know, good guys like you, y'all got to be right every time. They just have to be right every once in a while, and they get in.
That's right, and I use the terminology that some of my clients that understand it kind of chuckle with me about it, but it's like playing whack-a-mole, right? I mean, you know, if you ever went to Chuck E. Cheese or Lad's Castle, and you know, they had a little whack-a-mole game. It was fun to sit there and swat at them, but you know, you might hit one, but six more are going to pop up out of a hole somewhere.
Right.
And that's really where we are in the cybersecurity world. I say that to kind of lightheartedly lift the mood a little bit, but I mean, this is what we're seeing. Really, is a level of terroristic attack on the baseline safety and comfort of people, which is behind their electronic devices. You know, this is more invasive than someone coming in your home.
Oh, absolutely, and has lot longer term ramifications for people too. Than just somebody right. coming in their home. What do we do? You mentioned this earlier about a plan, and you know, I like the being prepared. thing. So, you know, hope for the best, plan for the worst. Talk to business owners, anybody out there. You're talking about making a plan if there was a cyber attack. What do you do? What's the basics of that?
That's right. So the first thing, obviously, is you want to stop the active attack from happening. You know, if I can kind of boil it down to simple terminology, first you want to try and prevent, obviously, for as much as is possible. You know, but prevention is prior to your reactionary plan. If you recognize that you've been compromised or something has gone inadvertently wrong, then you want to stop the active attack, which typically means removing network connectivity from the devices that are impacted. So if you're on a network with 100 devices, the Ethernet cables need to be pulled, or wireless, or however they're connected. Side note, here's a funny meme I saw not too long ago where there's the network cabinet and a bunch of blue cables behind it, and it's got a glass window on it that says, in the event of cyber attack, break glass and rip and pull cables.
But that's true.
That's realistically it, because, you know, you've got to stop the attack. Now, the second part of it, obviously, you want to be as intelligent about it as you can. A lot of people go to pushing buttons or doing things. My granddad had a saying about analog level technology, circuitry, especially like to build amplifiers and TVs and different things growing up. But his statement was, never do more than you know that you know that you know what you're doing.
Well,
and a lot of people will panic, understandably so, because their data is at risk. They will panic and they'll start doing things to try and right the ship. This is the point where you want a professional involved. You want someone who can come in, because if you contaminate the crime scene, the likelihood of finding a recovery option quickly, or even identifying the bad actor that caused this, goes down significantly. So crime scene contamination, it's the same thing as if there was a murder. You know, you don't want to go trekking through the scene with dirty boots on, and when the investigators and the law enforcement officials show up, they can't get a good read on what's happened there. And really, your reaction plan needs to involve those two entities. You know, the how do you stop it, who you call on to get it remedied, and then, you know, where you cut your losses, you know, what's our maximum financial impact? Because at a point, there will be a time that you have to say, okay, we've got to get back to functioning as a business. Do I keep going after trying to get this data back, or do I have a stopgap operation plan? So let's say your business relies on transactions where a customer has to deliver or pick up things from you, and you have to enter it into your computer for every transaction. Do you have a paper method to back that up in the event that your systems are down, so that you can still operate your business but try and recover from the attack that's happened?
Wow. So it goes, I mean, you have an old school backup to new school technology.
That's correct. And I mean, nobody wants to go that route if you have to, unless you absolutely have to. But, you know, if there's a time frame where you're offline, again, it's at an insult to injury if multiple levels of it are happening. But from especially a small business perspective, you need to be able to keep the doors open. You need to be able to keep functionality. Mm-hmm. And municipalities have a little more grace with that. But, you know, we small business owners, we don't have that luxury.
No.
You know, you don't have 10 days of shutdown time to worry about, you know, federal agents harvesting through your data.
So what about, you talking about earlier, the last segment, talking about backing up. And I think about this, too, because a lot of times we have one set of backups here that happen from computer to computer in case we would lose a hard drive or something like that.
Right.
But then that's all still connected on the same network. I, you know, on your prompting, you know, do the physical backing up to a separate hard drive and take that elsewhere. Is that the best security? I mean, because that's not connected. I mean, it sits in a desk drawer.
Yeah, as long as it's not connected to your operating network, as long as there's no contiguous connection, you're okay on that backup, because the way that these things are laterally moving is across wired or wireless connectivity. So they've in some way, you know, transitioned through your network to devices. But if that device is physically plugged in during the time of you know, the ransom or the attack, that device is subject to being compromised as well. Offsite / cloud backup services have a lot of artificial intelligence technology in them where they can detect anomalies in the reporting pattern, but they also can be staged at intervals for backup so that you're not as vulnerable, so that if it's being backed up off site, you may lose a day's worth of your data, but you have not inherently lost everything, because that system has in some way identified an anomaly in the replication of your information and has accordingly likely stopped it, or has alerted you, or in some way brought to surface that this is the finding.
So off-site or a cloud, would it save that as a given day? You know what I'm saying? Like, I always think about restore to an earlier earlier time for Windows stuff. Would it save, like, say it backs up, and it backs up this day, December 17th, and it's backed up as midnight tonight, and that's not connected to anything else that might get loaded later? Or, I mean, is it safe from being infected from other days that may have that issue? Or you think that AI catches the infection before it gets to the cloud?
So they use I'll talk about our product. I can talk most intelligently about it, because I think that's the one I'm most familiar with.
Yeah.
Our product has a heuristic scanning engine that looks for mass change in data. It kind of learns how much you've been adding daily, and it looks for mass change. Now, it also is an iterative backup process. So it has prior days encapsulated.
Okay.
And it has, so if let's say it backs up after the ransomware attack happens for whatever reason. The ransomed data is in one file cluster. Your good data from yesterday would be in a separate file cluster.
Okay.
And it doesn't have to be day to day either. It can be hour to hour. Some systems, we have some clients that are on a 2 or 3 hour backup schedule.
That's that helps. You only lose.
Yeah, and I mean, what it really allows you to do is kind of send a clear and concise message to the bad guys. Especially, what I hate to hear most is when someone has one of these attacks, they don't have a method to get their information back, and we have to ask the question to them: do you want us to make an attempt to find out what the ransom would be? And fortunately, I've never had anyone say yes to that question. But just out of compassion, sure, for them, we kind of have to ask that question. And everyone that we've worked with has had some level of backup, or in some cases been ready to move forward.
Okay, one last question here. If you're just joining us, talking to Abe Harper from Harper Technologies, and I could keep you on for days, but you got places to go. You're talking about how, and we could just, I guess, theorize how the hackers got in Pensacola and New Orleans, but the idea that people have this thing in their head where there's a bunch of cats in front of keyboards typing, or somebody in this bunker in Russia typing, trying to break in, it usually comes in other methods, right? It's not them coding their way in. They come in through some door that somebody opens.
That's right. Most commonly, it's I call it Click Happy Clay. That's kind of my mnemonic that I remind people of.
What is
of.
That? Click Happy Clay. Okay.
Click Happy Clay. The guy that sits in the office, or the young lady that sits in the office, who email comes in, it has a PDF attached from a vendor that is clearly not spelled right in the email. And I think you and I talked about this,
yep,
on a previous segment,
yep,
too, where the email is maybe not properly labeled, or they don't know what identifiers to look for in that email. Or they go to a website and they click on something on the clock, knowing that they really shouldn't be doing that at work anyway, but hey, I've got a few minutes, why not go ahead and try and get this little bit of personal business taken,
mm-hmm,
care of? And they inadvertently end up in a compromised security site. The hackers, by default, if you have a firewall and if you have good security measures on your network, they're not going to easily find their way in. Now, I know previously we've talked a little bit about this, and it's something we're really kind of focused on our clients with, but remote desktop services, if you have terminal services or RDP open to the world, you are much more at risk, because that's a widely known compromise that Microsoft has often said, hey, this is a very commonly exploited area, so secure it, use a VPN, use a method to connect securely. But no, these guys aren't just out there throwing darts at a board hoping that they get connected. They're intentionally sending out phishing or vulnerability penetration emails.
All right. Now we have a lot of work to do, all of us hearing this and getting to work. People want to, I guess, just hit you up on the web or give you a call. What's the contact? What's the best way to get in touch with Harper Technologies?
Yeah, absolutely. They can find us at harpertech.com. We're all over Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Harper Tech or Harper Technologies. And, of course, we love phone calls. 251-690-9029 is our office. And we're located at the corner of Broad and St. Francis on 50 North Broad Street. So we love walk-ins as well.
Good stuff. Abe, appreciate your time and enjoy your day. And we'll talk airplanes next time, right?
Absolutely. Let's talk something a little more happy. I appreciate it.
There you go.
Always a pleasure.
It's great to talk to Abe Harper, Harper Technologies. We're coming right back. Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, big thank you. Big thank you to Abe Harper, Harper Technologies. Love that guy. We'll get him back on the show real soon, and hopefully we all learn something there that what's happening right now in big municipalities could be the same thing affecting our businesses. He was telling me when we went to the news break, he said the numbers are up big time this year, 2019, over years in the past for cyber attacks out there. As goes New Orleans and Pensacola, can go ABC Widget Company or anywhere else out there. So do be vigilant. Hey, of course, we're ticking down right now. We're looking at Christmas, a week away from tomorrow? And you've got those guys on your list. You got some guys to buy for, and every year you buy them something that they got, you know, they put in a drawer and never take out, or they go, oh, that's great, thank you for the gift. What if you gave them a gift that was practical and also a brilliant idea? What about giving them the gift of Harry's? You know, I've been shaving with Harry's for over 6 years now. Love the shave, love the convenience, and really love the price, half of what you pay for replacement blades at the pharmacy or the grocery store. And right now with Harry's, listeners of Midday Mobile can get $5 off any Harry's shave set when you use my code MOBILE at harrys.com. Shipping cuts off at the end of this week, so you need to act now. I mean, time is really ticking. It's a practical gift he's going to use, he's going to love, and you're going to get thank yous throughout the year as he gets the great shave from Harry's. And right now, it's even better. Not only do you have the great Harry's shave, but they come in ready-to-gift handsome holiday gift boxes ready to go under the tree. Sets start at just $20, so it's within your Secret Santa limits as well. And like I said, it comes in a box ready to go, put it under the tree, and you're done. As a special offer for y'all, we partnered with Harry's to give you $5 off any shave set, including their limited edition holiday sets, once you enter the code MOBILE at harrys.com. Make sure to use that code MOBILE. Each Harry's shaving set comes with a weighted handle, the option to have it engraved, 5-blade razor cartridge, foaming shave gel for a rich lather, travel cover to protect your blades, and it all comes packaged in that handsome holiday gift box. Shipping cuts off at the end of this week, so act now. Just use code MOBILE at harrys.com. It's code MOBILE, and you'll be thanking me, and they'll be thanking me, and it'll be a very Merry Christmas for everybody. All right, wrapping it up for today. Coming up on tomorrow, Wednesday, a couple things to do. We'll be looking at D-Day, as it is for impeachment vote in Washington, as they have, I guess, said all they were going to say in Washington, and now it's time for the votes to go down on the articles of impeachment. Of course, like we talked about earlier in the show, that brings up a lot of questions about what happens next in the Senate, the timeline on that, and we'll dig into that more coming up on tomorrow's show, so be ready for that. Also, we'll check in with Jeff Poore tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. Lots to talk about with him. We'll talk about this. Also, the upcoming session in Montgomery, some Goat Hill politics. Oh, yeah, they're already getting ramped up. All right, Feinbaum is next. I am out of here. We'll see you manana for Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5.